What up? What up? So this is your boy, Tim, and thank you for listening. This is Wild Word, and we're going to be talking about, on this episode, Ice Cube's contract with Black America. We're going to break it down. We're also going to be talking about the Pac-12 and their protests and why that matters. And last but not least, we're going to be breaking down this ultra, very, very important, pivotal book. I think it's very pivotal, called Chaos or Community by MLK. We're going to break it down, and we're going to tell you a little bit why it matters today. Okay, so listen to these topics and, you know, get back to me. Tell me what you think. We're on Facebook, so we have a group called Wild Word Podcast that's on Facebook. You also can reach me on Instagram, TimothyWilliams24. So listen, and thank you for listening. Okay, we want to hear back from you. Peace. Wild Word, baby. Wild Word, baby. What up? What up? So we're on the first topic, and I want to rap about this Ice Cube contract with Black America. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. So if you haven't seen it, it's pretty much a contract that he wrote. Well, not just him, but a lot of other people. Him and a lot of other people. And he's talking about demands that we as Black people want from our government. You know, we want to get rid of racism. You know, I was looking at something that said, or a state, Michigan, they was looking at racism as a public health issue. You know, so he pretty much is looking at racism in the same way. Like, he wants clear demands that needs to be met. He talks about getting rid of some police brutality and getting rid of qualified immunity, which pretty much lets cops get away with killing Black folk, you know, very easily in the legal system. And he talks about a lot of different things. Like, he also, I like the fact that he doesn't just talk about police reform and police brutality, even though that's a big thing we need to discuss. But he also talks about us as Black people getting our fair share when it comes to finances. You know, so a lot of times I was looking at an article when it was talking about subcontractors versus prime contractors. And a lot of times when governments are giving out these contracts, like millions upon millions of dollars, Black folk are not getting nowhere near what they're supposed to be getting. Okay, so we might have 20% of Black people somewhere, and they're only getting like 1% of contracts or something like that. So those are kitchen bread and butter issues that I'm glad he's addressing with this contract for Black America. But one thing I do love about it is that I was looking at Ice Cube. He was on a lot of different shows talking about it, Black shows, Black media. And I like how he was very humble with it, you know, because he's like, hey, I don't got all the answers. It's pretty much a draft. It's a conversation, you know, it's a conversation. And he put it out there for people to comment on it, criticize it, see what their thoughts were on it. But this is the type of stuff we need to do, because this is organizing. Now we're organizing and mobilizing around some key issues in our community. And then now we have to present it to all these politicians. So not just Biden, but I think everybody in all your states, you know, we should have this, some version of this contract for Black America, and we should be giving this, we should be giving it to the politicians and be like, hey, if you ain't, what are you going to do to address these issues? You know, so this is accountability right here, you know. But like I was saying before, he was humble with it, because like you said, it's just a rough draft. So I was looking at him on one station, Roland Martin. And the Black women on there was like, hey, there's nothing on here about Black women. Like, where's that at? And of course, if he got, you know, a lot of men to do it, he probably didn't get to that section. But he said, hey, you know what? You're right. We didn't have a lot on Black women. There's a lot of Black women issues, a lot of stuff that he wasn't privy to like that. So he said, hey, you know what? Give me, he got her contact, and he said he was open for, you know, revisions, and he was open for, you know, criticism, and hey, let's add on to it, you know. So, and that's how the dialogue needs to be in the Black community. It shouldn't be so top down, like, oh, this organization, we researched this, now that's for Black America, you know. It seemed like he want the rank and file working class, middle class, everybody, all types of blacks to really have a weigh in on it, and yeah, and have some agency and control over it. You know, so when we say, hey, this is our black agenda, we feel like we're more invested in it. You know, so and yeah, he said he's working with both sides. He's working with both sides, so he's pretty much, you know, looking for conservatives. Good luck on that. I don't think they really care about Black America. But yeah, so, you know, if you haven't seen it, what you think about that contract? So contract with Black America. And it's the same thing that political parties do, too. They had their agenda set out in the 90s. Republicans had contract with America, you know, and they had their tax cuts and all the stuff they wanted to do. You know, in terms of law. So, you know, that's this contract. Hey, Black America, this is what we want. He also took a shot at Hollywood. He want more of blacks to have control and own their own studios and own the decisions in order to, in terms of like what movies get made, what stories get made, you know. So we need control. Yeah, we need more control when it comes to Black people in Hollywood. Yeah, we have Black movies and stuff, but a lot of times the companies are owned by non-Black people, you know. So I like what Cube is doing, man. I like this. I like this conversation, and we got to keep it up, you know. And it got to be more than just a conversation. But before you get to anything, you got to get that organization piece, you know, and get everybody, as much people as you can, to buy into it. So, you know, contract with Black America. So what do y'all think about it? You know, like I said, I like the financial piece. I like the business piece. I like the fact that it's addressing systemic racism. So I love it, you know. So tell me what y'all think about that Black contract with America. So read a few, look at some interviews on it, read a little bit of it. Tell me what you think. Wild word. You on the next topic, yo. All right, so we on the next topic. And this is, you know, I just want to ask y'all, what state of mind y'all in? You know what I'm saying? I'm watching a lot of news stories, and it's becoming more evident to me, you know. It's like, what state of mind are you in? You know what I'm saying? And whose side are you on? That's more the question I want to ask. Whose side are you on? And I saw this this news story, and it was talking about the Pac-12. So if you don't know who that is, that the Pac-12, that's a college football. You know, they have all these different conferences and all of this stuff. But I'm proud of these college players who are pretty much saying, hey, they organizing, and they saying they gonna opt out. A lot of players in the Pac-12 right now talking about opting out, and their state of mind is like, hey, I'm trying to stay alive. You feel me? And I understand that. You know what I'm saying? People get so fixated on these sports and stuff, and I'm a big sports fan, but I don't want nobody going out there and dying just for me to have any entertainment. You know what I'm saying? But I appreciate that these college players understand the moment, and they have all the leverage right now. They have all the leverage right now to get what I think college players should have been getting, and they should have been getting paid. You know, they should have been getting paid. So if you haven't seen it, the Pac-12 players said they opting out. Not only do they want to make sure that the coronavirus testing and all of that stuff is legit and that it's actually following the CDC guidelines, but they also want 50% of the revenue. 50%. They want 50% of the revenue, and they want to share it with these colleges, because these colleges get billions upon billions of dollars on these college players. So they want that, and they also want health care 6 years after they stop playing. Now, if you've been living under a rock or haven't been really paying attention, football has, you know, has pretty much concealed a lot of the injuries that people get from football, or the risk, that's more the way to put it. They have concealed the risk with playing football. So a lot of times they get concussions, CTE. You know, I remember Will Smith had that a movie talking about concussion and everybody hated it, or not everybody, but people who want to live, continue to live in the dark, hated it, right? They didn't like the fact that, you know, Will Smith was putting a big, big light on that issue. You know, and there's been other people who said it before Will Smith, but, you know, a lot of people don't really look at stuff until, like, a big, big star says it, right? So they had a whole movie following this guy. He was a doctor for years in the NFL and was trying to tell them about CTE, and they didn't care. And they tried to put it to the side, and you know, what he said was right, you know? So a lot of players now are in lawsuits with the NFL talking about these concussions and stuff. So NFL and football in general doesn't have a good track record in terms of protecting players, you know, in terms of their health. They're looking at the bottom line. And it seemed like in this time now, it's like, which side are you on? Are you on the side of the workers, or are you on the side of management? And a lot of times management is business owners and people who own a lot of these, who own NFL, who own the NBA. But I feel like the NBA is doing a little bit better than NFL. But even if, yeah, you know, so what side are you on? But let's get back to the Pac-12. So, yeah, they want that health care. So that's why that health care piece needs to be in there, because I had to explain that, because people would be like, why do you need health care 6 years after they stop playing? That's the reason. It's also a good documentary on, I think, HBO that talks about it. It's called Student Athlete. And everybody don't make it. You know, everybody don't make it and become a big star, you know. And a lot of people get injured. And especially with football, like you said, you're dealing with mental injuries, CTE, people killing themselves. You know what I'm saying? Junior Seau, who is a Hall of Fame linebacker, killed himself. He had CTE. You know, it found out later in his brain and stuff. So, you know, you gotta protect yourself. You know what I'm saying? And this COVID crisis is disproportionately killing Black and Latino people. You know, it's disproportionately killing them, and it's disproportionately killing people who already have health issues. And a lot of people who are poor, who can't afford health care even before the COVID crisis, are at risk, you know. So even that's a lot of poor white players and things like that. So, and these players got families and things like that who may have a pre-existing condition. So I definitely commend these players for getting organized and agitating. That's what Frederick Douglass said, right? Agitate, you know. So, you know, I'm proud of them. But yeah, we'll see where this goes. You know, I'm really interested to follow this story. I've heard this story before, you know, minus the COVID crisis, where players were trying to get organized and unionized and stuff like that. So, we'll see what happens, you know. But I just wish that this energy, when it comes to the players and football players and stuff, is translated to regular workers, you know. Because on a different front, I think we talked about it in here, that Mississippi players, they use their agency too and their power to get that Confederate flag off of the Mississippi state flag. You know, they said, hey, we ain't playing no more. They said, oh, okay, we're going to get rid of this flag. You know, so people have been trying to get rid of that flag for years, decades, and it took players, the sports people, to be like, hey, you cutting down this sports stuff unless you do what's right. So, but awesome job to these players, man, for using their power and organizing and you know, and keeping what's important, you know. So are we going to be people center, or are we going to be profit center? The choice is y'all, the choice is yours. So I like this state of mind. So there we go. So tell me what you think about this situation of the Pac-12, and yeah, wild word, baby. All right, and we on the last topic, All right, so I really want to rap about this book called Chaos or Community. It's a book that MLK wrote, you know, in 1967, and it's a must must read. It talks about a whole lot of stuff. If you're someone who cares about Black folk, you care about the struggle in terms of trying to fight for a fight against systemic racism, you're fighting for fairness and equality and all of that stuff, this is pretty much a guide. It's pretty much a guide for how you fight, what are some of the issues you're going to run into, and it's definitely going to make you look at a lot of the current events and things that's going on in a whole new way, you know, because it's very simple, really. I mean, some complicated things in there, but it's very simple. It's a lot that I can pretty much pull from this. But one thing that I like, this he talked about the four ways that Black people need to organize, and the four pillars of our community pretty much that are very important. So he talked about the Black press, he talked about the fraternities, he talked about the church, and he talked about unions, okay? So the one thing I already talked about church in Wild World before, but it was kind of interesting just hearing him kind of echo some of the same stuff. And, you know, are we going to be people-centered or are we going to be profit-centered? It's pretty much that simple, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of churches, you know, he pretty much was like, when MLK, and this is, and mind you, this is a part of MLK that I feel like doesn't get taught in schools like that, because everybody know that I Have a Dream King and all of that, but he was getting into economic justice. Yes, this is the king that was saying, hey, we need a basic universal income, okay, because we got automation, pretty much that's machines, that's wiping a lot of jobs out for people, especially Black people that's in these cities. So it was a time where I was talking to my dad, and he was talking about, you know, hey, he had a good union job that was in the factory, but, you know, they cut the union out, and a lot of these jobs went overseas, and a lot of people lost jobs like that, right? They called it deindustrialization, right? So he was talking about this stuff, which was going on in the, you know, what, in the late 60s. Right, so the premise of the book is pretty much, hey, 1964 Civil Rights Act, okay, now you can't discriminate against Black people in terms of you can't say Black in colored water fountains and public accommodations, you can't make Black people have to go through the back door when they go to a hotel and sleep in separate rooms and all of that stuff, in separate bathrooms and all of that, right? So that was the Civil Rights Act, 1964. Then you had 1965, the Voting Rights Act, which had a whole lot of stuff in it that pretty much made it so that you couldn't be denied the right to vote, you know, based on poll taxes and a whole lot of other stupid stuff, right? And they also had a mechanism in there that said any Southern state, if they want to change any laws or whatever, they have to pre-clear with the federal government. But then later that's been taken out in 2013. But anyway, this book, Chaos of Community, it just focused on, he said, hey, the next phase. So he did all of that, 1964, 1965. And then right after that, Watts happened. Watts riots. Yes. So, and he was very confused. He was like, hey, how in the world did Watts happen? The city literally burned down. People was, you know, riots, all of that stuff, and he was like, whoa, what's going on? And he realized that, hey, you had high unemployment there, you had police brutality. So it's kind of eerie talking about that, because it's kind of similar to where we are now in 2020 in terms of looking at George Floyd, you know. So he thought it was all happy, like, hey, 1964, 1965, hey, we did it, you know. But he realized that the civil rights movement, normally the one that we read about in history books and in school, that was mainly a Southern movement, but it was a whole different reality up north. And he said, hey, up north they were just as bad in terms of racism, you know. It was housing discrimination. They didn't want Black people living next to them. They didn't want Black people to go to the same schools as them, right? So yeah. And then the housing conditions in a lot of these areas were horrible, because you had white flight. You had white people leaving since 1940s, right? White flight. And then you also had a Black middle class that left a lot of these places too. So what you had left was a black working class that was in a lot of these areas, these cities, right? And MLK actually went to Chicago and he lived in the slums. Like, he lived where the poor people were. He lived where a lot of black working class people were. And he realized, hey, dang, like, it's a whole different reality over here. You know, the housing was messed up. Heat wasn't in the house, all of that type of stuff. People didn't have any jobs, right? So, and then, like you said, they were, even some black middle class people were being denied housing because of blockbusting. And even when they bought houses, black people was buying them at, you know, an inflated or higher price. So he started getting into that, a lot of the economic justice, the stuff that we're talking about today, you know. So Chaos of Community, man, and then he pretty much gave, you know, a model for attacking this stuff. So they had something called Operation Breadbasket, and they was, you know, forcing companies, you know, hey, how many people are you hiring? You know, they did that in Atlanta and they did that in Chicago. How many, you got 30% of black people here, you need black people on the board. You need to hire so many black people. Okay, so that was like affirmative action, right? A form of reparation, some people would say, right? So, you know, that's how aggressive we got to be with it, you know. But I like this book because it pretty much gives you a model for how to organize and why you need to organize. So he said that, hey, black folk, we got to use the church. We got to use our fraternities and sororities. So they just can't be everybody doing stomp the yard. That's that. You can't just have your fraternities and sororities just doing that. We need them in the fight and organizing around fighting against racism, and, you know, and especially when we get to the voting, and especially when we get to economic issues. So black church, fraternities, unions, and what was the last thing? I'm forgetting. Let me see. Oh, in the press. Yeah, and we have to have black newspapers that's talking about real issues that's going in the black community. So he got real on a lot of stuff, man. You know, and I even had to check myself, you know, when we talk about the black middle class and how sometimes black folk, how we black middle class people who have quote unquote made it and they got a degree and they got a little bit of economic security relative to the black working class, how sometimes we look down on our own people, you know. So a lot of times we try to talk about black unity, but some black people don't like other black people. They look down on other black people, you know what I'm saying, in terms of thinking they're better. And they, you know, we look at, some of them look at success as how close can you come to being white, or how close, or your proximity to whiteness, that counts as success to too many black folk, you know what I'm saying. So it causes you to really reflect on yourself too, you know. I remember when I was trying to do work, or, you know, trying to do work in DC, and then, you know, going to Ward 7, going to Ward 8. And sometimes I'll be like, oh, I feel a little intimidated here or whatever. But, you know, we can't be scared of our own people. You know what I'm saying? We can't be scared of our own people. You know, like, with nobody's monolithic. I know that. But, yeah, Chaos of Community, man. I would definitely say read that book. It goes into a whole lot of stuff, you know, just simple. You know, I like the part where he talked about the space program and saying, hey, like, what is our nation's priorities? You know, if we're supposed to be Christian and all of this stuff, why are we spending so much money in going to space and going to Vietnam and wasting so much money on weapons and drones? If you want to update it to today, we spend so much money, billions of dollars, on weapons and tanks and drones and nuclear weapons and all of this stuff. And we're like, okay, what has that done for us? What has that done for us in the world? What has that done for us in places like Iraq and Afghanistan? You know, it's still the same how it was in 2001, 2000. You know, so what did all of that do? You know, so why are you not investing more in schools, in businesses, black businesses? Why are you not investing more in good stuff like that? You know, so in recreation, right? Why are we not investing more in schools, recreation? What's the other thing? Yeah, like you said, businesses, all of that stuff. You know what I'm saying? So it seemed like he was kind of talking about a defund the police before it was a defund the police. Now, you know, judging from what I read in the book, he probably, I don't know if he would have agreed with the phrase defund the police, but he was pretty much kind of criticizing the fact that we spend so much in war and all of this stuff, but then we leave and we neglect the poor. And then we wonder why riots and stuff happen, you know? So it's like the gasoline is already there. When someone can't afford rent, when someone can't afford, you know, basic stuff, and then you have police brutality, it's setting up the conditions for a riot, you know? And then you add on to the fact that a lot of people don't trust the police because you have police brutality and all of this stuff. So, you know, you definitely got to read this book, but it's very prophetic. And a lot of stuff that he was talking about in the 60s, sadly, we're still talking about today. But anybody who is serious about organizing Black people, I feel like have read this book. Yes. So definitely read it. Tell me what you think. And yeah, that's it for this week on Wild Words.